Join the conversation. On Cape Talk.
So about that movie, Schumacher, the documentary, dropped on Netflix yesterday. It's the first family-approved official movie about the driver's life. And I watched it last night, really, really enjoyed the film, even though I have largely lost interest in Formula One. I used to be a big fan. In the mid-90s to the early sort of 2000s, I almost never missed a race. Sunday afternoons, you would find my husband and I on the couch watching a Formula One race, if there was one. Then, of course, we had kids and our Sunday afternoons weren't our own anymore. And along the way, some of the magic just went out of it for me. But this film just brought it all right back. From the very first race at Spa to his 7 world championship titles, the film covers Schumacher's rise to fame, his struggle with elements of that fame, his love of his family, his wish for privacy, most of all, his just incredible focus on getting the best possible performance out of every car on every circuit. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not the big reveal some people were expecting. I think a lot of people, and I've seen their tweets in the last couple of days, I can't wait to find out how he is and what his life is like now, since the skiing accident, which changed everything. And of course, it's not there. And once you watch right to the end of the movie, you will understand why it's not there. Literally, the very last lines of the film sum up the family's approach for us. So much to love. The archive footage was amazing. Seeing all the old names and faces, bringing back the drivers, the managers, the constructors, teams that they interviewed for this film. Bless the filmmakers for bringing Eddie Irvine back into my life again. That was an unexpected little gift. But I'm intrigued to know how accurate a description it was of the man. And we're going to find out from someone who actually did get to know him. Martin Myers chats to us all the time. He was on with me just a couple of days ago talking about Music Exchange. And Martin, always lovely to talk to you. And I often talk to you about music and the arts. I know in my mind that you are also a sporting fanatic. I did not know that you actually didn't just meet, but got to know and spend quite a lot of time with the Schumacher family. How on earth did that happen?
It's a secret that I've kept for many, many years. My nearest and dearest know the whole story, and I'm happy to relay it because I watched that movie last night with you, and watching it, all the memories came flooding back. My ex-wife used to do luxury accommodation, and by chance, they said, this Formula One guy's coming here, you need to look after him.
Okay.
I hear the name Michael Schumacher, and I go, oh no, not that oak, I can't stand him, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. I used to be Formula One mad. Cut a long story short, Lisa looks after him, he stays at the Table Bay Hotel, she says, do you want to meet him? I said, no, not really. I go and I get to meet the guy. He is the most charming, most humble, most quiet, most sincere person. I stood there absolutely gobsmacked. And I'd worked with stars in the music business and everything else. And so he said, you know, do you want a picture or anything? I said, no, not really, Michael. I've got this book. Don't you want to sign it for me? So he says, what do you want written there? I said, no, happy birthday. Best wishes, Michael. So he does it on this book. And this book has got a page on it that says The Million Dollar Driver. And I'm going, oh, my heavens. Okay. And they film this commercial in Cape Town, and he leaves, and you exchange numbers and everything else. And then we used to get these phone calls at home. Hi, it's Karina. And I go, Karina who? Karina Schumacher. Oh, hang on. Let me go get the wife. And I get the wife, and we get married, and they're chatting, and Karina and Lisa strike up a really good rapport. And they said, well, what are you doing for your honeymoon? You keep on talking about racing. Why don't you come and see us in Canada? So this is 99.
Yeah.
So we jet off to Canada, and they say, no, it's a code. You need to meet at this hotel, and we meet at this hotel and everything else. And you can see we spare parts sitting around there looking around, you know, eyes as big as owls. There's Jean Todt, there's Ross Brawn, there's your friend Eddie Irvine, there's Mika Hakkinen, and all of them in this hotel walking around. And there are these two spare parts sitting there. Next minute, Karina walks in and everybody looks and she comes, hi guys, how are you, blah, blah, blah. Get into the car, a car with the Ferrari team, drive around, get given these lanyards. And I look at this, I'm like, are there these massive stands at the Canadian Grand Prix? We must be up there somewhere. She goes, no, 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 come in, welcome to the team. Michael's in the car, go sit there, go say hello to him. And you see him in the car, and we sit and we chat, and we spend 3 days with the team because he's got time, because the time zones are different in Canada. And then he races, and he's leading, and he crashes into the wall, and he doesn't win the race and everything else. And then they leave, and they say, okay, we'll see you soon. And then as you see in the Grand Prix in 99, he crashes. He crashes into the wall at the British Grand Prix. He
broke his leg.
And then we go, thank heavens we didn't go to that race. You know, the Canadian one was the one just before. And then if we speak to Karina and that, and in the middle of November, we get a phone call out the blue. Guys, we're coming to visit. I told you. and they fly to South Africa in the jet. And they come to Cape Town, and he stays at the Bay Hotel. He comes to our home. He has dinner. He has a whale of a time. The media eventually find out that he's here and everything else, and he gets paparazzi'd like mad. And then they leave after 10 days, Roger and Chris, the pilots, and off they go, and they fly the private jet back home. And we get a phone call, guys, we want to reciprocate. When are you coming?
Oh, wow.
So we said, okay, well, what about in June, July? You tell us when. No, come these dates. We'll pick you up at the airport. So we fly to Nice, and we get there, and there's Karina to pick us up. No, Michael can't come into the airport. I said, Karina, no SH1T. He'll be mobbed. And we walk out, and there's Michael sitting in this massive BMW, which had just come out because his brother drove for BMW at this time, this huge X5. So we go to the house, and we get to the house, and we're having a whale of a time talking and smoking cigars, and he's talking about David Coulthard, and we're laughing and everything else. And he says, what do you want to do tomorrow? So I said, look, you know, Michael, we're guests of you. Whatever you're doing, you know, we'll just fit into your plans. No, I've got to go to Paris for a business meeting. So I go, and hang on, we're in Nice. How are we getting to Paris? Oh, bingo, the jet.
Sure.
Well, you put your bags down and you get on the jet in 8 a.m. in the morning. And I can tell you, you don't need to sit up with a seatbelt on. I was standing when the thing took off, and Roger and Chris and his friends, and they fly us off to Paris. And we get given with Karina and the kids. And this includes baby Mick Schumacher at the time. We go to Disneyland. We get 2 days at Disneyland while he's looking to buy a new jet. And then we fly back on the Wednesday back to the house in Nice. And then we went to Monaco to play football with his friends and everything else. And that's the only time I ever, in the 20 days I was with him or whatever when he was here and there, did I ask him about racing. And I think that's why he loved us, because I knew he was fast, and that's, you know, you knew what he did. And we get to Monaco, we're going to play football with friends. And I said, Michael, please, won't you take me through the tunnel?
Yeah.
Okay, but I can't go fast. I'll just go on the normal side of the road. Well, we were doing 220 k's an hour through the tunnel on the left-hand side. And he's looking and he's laughing at me while we're going through. And then you play football and you're about to leave. And we go to the car and he comes to me and he says, Martin, don't be scared. There are about 100 photographers at the car. Just act naturally. And his life was never his own.
Yeah.
Karina at the races, she would sit at the back of the garage and everything else. Like in Canada, I stood at and watched the start with Nigel, Stephanie, Ross Brawn, Jean Todt in the garage when they had spare cars. Karina would be in the back. He was intensely private. I mean, when we went to Magnacourt, which I sort of equate to Beaufort West with Cowfields in the middle of France, we was racing and he got pole. And I think it was on lap about 52 or 59. I can't remember. The engine blew. And I'm sitting in the back with Sabina Kim, who is his current manager, watching on the TV and everything. I was like, oh, I can't believe this. You know, I've been to 2 races now, 2 different times, and the car's blown up.
Yeah.
So I walk round the corner, and I walk straight into Michael. Just me and him. And he looks at me. I'm ashen-faced, almost in tears. And he looks at me and says, Martin, what's wrong? I said, Michael, your car blew up. He says, no, that's fine. We've spoken to Ross, spoken to Jean, they've spoken to Marinello. I've been in the garage, I've been with the crew. We know what's wrong. Come, I've got to take you for a beer, because I have a tradition with Ralph that if Ralph beats me, I need to go for a beer. So come, we need to go to the BMW garage.
Wow.
What had happened 5 minutes ago was completely obliterated from his mind. It's an undying memory I would have. He still told me 6 o'clock, be ready, because we've got to go in the helicopter back to the jet. And then I've got to tell Roger to rush home, because we've got to watch the European Cup final on TV, so we must be home before 8. When you get to a track on a weekend, from Thursday to Sunday, every minute is planned. People used to walk in, and they'd come to the Ferrari area, and they'd look, and Balbir Singh, his physio you saw on the documentary yesterday, would be around, and I'd be talking to him, and we'd be sitting there, and suddenly, Michael's come out of the garage.
Yeah.
You know, and then he'll walk and people will take photos and everything else. An intensely private man.
Yeah.
A remarkable human being. Everything came flooding back watching it. It's such an accurate portrayal. All he wanted to do was race, be the best that he could be, and he trained nonstop. He had no body fat on him at all.
You saw that.
And he wanted to go home and be with his kids. He was an intensely private man. And always looked out after his fellow man. You must remember when he got into Ferrari, the back wheel was going faster than the front wheel. And what he did was that team.
Yeah. Martin, no, I mean, it was extraordinary watching that last night. And, you know, I'd forgotten, you know, I remembered the 5 consecutive years of victory at Ferrari. I'd forgotten the 4 years leading up to that where he didn't make it to the top of the leaderboard and the angst that went with it. And the insight into that just incredible focus that he had was extraordinary. I mean, I really appreciate getting to the end of the film. I sat back and I thought, well, I bet there's going to be criticism because there were a lot of people who were looking for information about how he is now who didn't get it. I felt completely at ease with that decision by the filmmakers and the family, and the final lines of the film tell you exactly why it is that way. You've just told us as well that intense privacy, they have continued to protect that all of these years. Pretty clear, I think, that we are never really going to know, and I feel okay about that, Martin. But it's a good reminder for all of us, really, that there's certain information we're not entitled to have, even if it is about somebody who lives a very public life.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. He was deeply protective over his family. I mean, he would never have, when we were around them, there were never pictures of the kids or anything of Mick Schumacher. I remember when we were going on the plane on his private jet to go to Manyakur, I said, what does Dad do? No, Dad goes round and round. Well, you know, Mick Schumacher's now going round and round.
Yeah.
He never saw pictures of that. He never traded on that. You never saw Karina in the garage running around. And that's the reciprocal love that family have. And he was always looking out for people who were around him to make them feel comfortable, to make them feel special. I mean, he made us feel like $1 million wherever we went. It was unbelievable. We were two country bumpkins from Cape Town, you know.
Martin, we've got to leave it there. The country bumpkins we love chatting to. Thank you for sharing those extraordinary memories with us. And love the fact that you sat on that relationship for all of these years and didn't dine out on it, Martin. Thank you for sharing those very special thoughts with us, having watched the movie last night. Listen, even if you're not a racing fan, if you are a racing fan, it's an absolute must watch. If only to watch the sight of teenaged Michael Schumacher and Mika Hakkinen chasing each other around a track in go-karts. That was just fabulous to see. But it's a great piece of sport documentary making, I think, and a very, very beautifully made human story too. Schumacher is on Netflix. I'd be interested to hear from any of our audience who watched it last night, as I did and Martin did, and what you thought of the film, whether it's changed your perspective of the man. It certainly shifted mine. I'm early days, I must confess, I sort of didn't warm to him because I thought he was so aloof and arrogant, and I have a different view on that, having seen the film last night, that maybe I misjudged a lot of his behavior at that time. So that's Schumacher the movie. It's on Netflix now. I'd love to hear from those of you who saw it. You can call us on 021-446-0567 or do what Kai's done. Send us a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. Kai's message very much echoing what Martin said, saying my mom was a tour guide when Michael was in Cape Town and took him around the city and up Table Mountain. She too found him very humble and quiet. Kai, thanks for that feedback. I hope we'll have some more Schumacher. Maybe you just want to remember him, even if you didn't watch the film yet. Share your favorite Shumi memories with us on 072-567-1567.